Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John Brogdon and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Financial Services Council. And for those of you possibly in the general insurance world, the Financial Services Council is the industry body representing the life sector. So welcome here today to the life insurance session for the second Insurance Capital Review Seminar. Many of you would have attended the Insurance Capital Review Seminar on 30 June last, and we were very grateful for the significant amount of work by Rob Whelan and his team at the Insurance Council of Australia in organising last year's event. This year, I'd like to acknowledge the work of the Institute of Actuaries in organising today's event. Particularly, I want to thank Melinda Howes and her team for putting together a great program, which I understand has resulted in a full house of delegates. Who would have thought that the subject of insurance capital was so popular? I'd also like to particularly thank the APRA member Ian Lachlan and his team at APRA for their support for today's event and for providing the speakers to assist the insurance industry understand the revised proposals for insurance capital. I particularly want to acknowledge Ian's substantial contribution in the short term, almost 12 months but not quite, that he's been a member of APRA. His appointment has been very positive for the insurance industry, and the transition from John Trowbridge to Ian has been seamless. We have had a wonderful level of consultation with Ian and his team on the very significant and challenging issues that confront us here today and have done for some months and will into the future. Now, there are approximately 130 representatives attending this life insurance session, and that, I think, is proof of the significance of the matters we're discussing today. And they're not just important for the industry, but they are important for consumers and, indeed, the role that life insurance plays in the Australian economy. Now, we are to be ably presented to by three and a half, and I'll tell you why there's a half in a minute, three and a half people from APRA. Stuart Bingham, Suzanne Soldra and Andrew Patterson. Stuart, Suzanne and Andrew will be presenting on the revised capital proposals. Now, the half person is Dennis Wilkinson, because Dennis isn't presenting, but he will be taking questions. So save up your hard questions for Dennis. Now, what I'll do is introduce the four participants up front, and then they'll just bring themselves up and back for speaking to minimise the level of administrivia. Stuart Bingham is a senior manager in APRA's Diversified Institutions Division. He joined APRA in 2008 and has also had roles in the Supervisory Support Division. Stuart also represents APRA on the Solvency Subcommittee of the International Association of Insurance Supervisors. Stuart's an actuary with 25 years' experience in the financial services industry, including 8 years as a life insurance appointed actuary. Can you please remember to turn your phones off, because I haven't turned mine off, which is ringing over there right now. that's part of the way to bring attention to the fact that you should turn it. So this is all organised. Suzanne Soldra joined APRA's Supervisory Support Division in August 2009 as an actuarial advisor specialising in life insurance. Her previous role with Zurich Financial Services in Australia as manager of the Life Actuarial Services team. Before that, she was employed as an Assistant Commissioner for Life Insurance at the Insurance and Superannuation Commission, working in the team that developed the original capital standards under the Life Insurance Act of 95. Andrew Patterson is an actuary of 25 years' experience in the financial services industry. Andrew joined APRA in 2009 as a policy advisor on APRA's Insurance Capital Review Project. Andrew has previously worked with Munich Re and AMP in a wide variety of roles. And lastly, Dennis Wilkinson is a General Manager, Diversified Institutions, with responsibility for frontline supervision. Dennis joined APRA in 2005 after many years in the finance industry, both in Australia and in Asia. Dennis also chairs APRA's Internal Life Insurance Industry Committee and represents APRA on the International Joint Forum on Financial Conglomerates. Now, as with the earlier session, I'm told you've all been socialised into how to ask questions. There is the microphone in the middle of the floor, or alternatively, on the mobile number indicated above, you can please SMS your questions, and depending on time, some of them will appear in front of me there and I'll have a chance to ask them of the panel. So can I please invite Stuart to kick it off for the APRA team? Thank you.
Thank you, John. And welcome to everyone to this life insurance session. As was said earlier today, our aim in this session is to take you through the details of our revised proposals for life insurance and also give some background into our thinking behind the revisions. What we'll be going through today is the major themes coming out from the consultation, talking about the capital base, discount rates. Then we'll go through each of the individual capital charges, being insurance risk, operational risk, and asset risk, and then some other issues where some changes have occurred. Then, of course, we'll have time for some questions. I'm going to speak on the major themes from the consultation, the capital base and discount rates. Suzanne will talk about insurance risk and operational risk, and then Andrew will talk about asset risk and some of the other changes. APRA received a large number of submissions in response to the discussion and the technical papers. The level of response was very pleasing, and it was obvious that a lot of time and effort was put into the submissions. And because of the quality of the submissions, it certainly gave us a lot to think about. For those of you who were in the earlier session, you would have heard Helen discuss the major themes from the consultation so far, those being complexity, conservatism, and pro-cyclicality. I just want to expand on a few of these points in relation to the life insurance industry. With regards to complexity, submissions noted that there were too many minor components which, when all added together, resulted in a capital requirement which was in excess of that required to meet a 1 in 200 year scenario. In particular, the asset risk charge was felt to be overly complex, and particularly for business that had discretionary features. The requirement to calculate stressed reinsurance assets in the default module was another example of excessive complexity that submissions felt didn't add much in the way of risk sensitivity. The insurance risk charge was also seen as overly complex, and in particular, the way in which the termination value minimums were applied. And finally, submissions noted that there were a number of calculations required combined with correlation matrices, all making it very difficult to explain the result, and in particular, to explain that result to senior management and boards. With regards to conservatism, once again, the issue around the application of the termination value minimums, and particularly at the APRA product group level, was raised in many submissions. Also, the requirement to include all admissible assets in the asset risk calculation, which means including surplus assets, was considered to be inconsistent with the target 99.5% probability of sufficiency. With regards to procyclicality, Helen has already mentioned this in the earlier session, but in particular, the multiplicative stresses for real interest rates, inflation, and volatilities in the asset risk charge were considered to be particularly procyclical. The quiz results indicated that the proposed capital requirements for life insurance were substantially higher than the existing standards. However, as I always like to point out in forums like this, there were statutory funds where the requirement reduced. Now, this tended to be in situations where the removal of the expense reserve or the new business reserve had quite an impact. Where the capital requirements increased, the key areas tended to be as follows. For insurance risk, once again, the issue of the requirement to apply the termination values at the APRA product group level was seen as an issue. The result of that was the biggest impact was on group life business, where the margins in the premium rates were insufficient to absorb the stresses that were being asked to be applied. And in particular, the stress from the mortality and morbidity event stress was the one that caused the increase in capital. For the asset risk charge, the biggest impact was in the credit spreads module, where the proposed charges for credit risk were much higher than what is in the existing resilience reserve calculation. For operational risk, obviously this was a new charge, and so that resulted in an increase in capital required. But particularly for funds with high turnover in investment business, where the 3% of the premium was ended up being the calculation. The impact of the proposals on the investment-linked funds was fairly small, as the operational risk charge was similar to the existing investment-linked margin. The main change in the investment-linked funds was the requirement to hold an asset risk charge on surplus assets. The changes that we have proposed to the original proposals will simplify them where appropriate, will reduce some of the pro-cyclical effects, and address areas where the original proposals were overly conservative. Suzanne and Andrew will explain these changes in more detail. I now want to discuss the capital base. Submissions noted that the capital base can vary significantly from the net assets in the financial statements. APRA acknowledges that this can be the case. However, the principles underlying the adjustments are the same principles that we apply in determining the capital base for ADIs and for general insurers. For example, we do not believe it is appropriate to include intangible assets, such as future premium income, in the capital base, as intangible assets have little or no value if insurers encounter difficulties or have to be wound up. There were some submissions that suggested that these changes would be difficult to explain to boards. However, at APRA, we do feel that these adjustments are explainable and can be understood by boards and management. I've now mentioned a number of times the issue around the application of the termination value to the APRA product group level. And what we're now proposing is to broaden the product groups to which the termination value minimum applies. The proposal now is that the business of a statutory fund can be treated as a single product group. However, participating products and non-participating products with discretionary entitlements to share an investment experience must be treated as separate group or groups, reflecting the way these products are managed in practice. The aim of this is to ensure that reserves belonging to these types of businesses are not used to provide capital support to other types of business. So as an example, if you have an investment fluctuation reserve on an investment account business that is set aside for a particular group of policies, we don't believe that it's appropriate for that to be used to back the capital requirements on risk business. The impact of this change on the capital base is likely to be small. However, we do expect this change to have a much bigger impact on the insurance risk capital charge. Suzanne will go into this in further detail later. With regards to deduction for inadmissible assets, the exclusion on recognising goodwill in controlled entities has been relaxed for genuine arm's length investments, such as in property trusts. However, we have defined these investments to exclude any insurance-related businesses, such as brokers, agents, servicing or management companies. The issue of whether to allow for tax benefits for the difference between the policy liability and termination values is still an area under consideration by APRA. As a result, we have asked insurers to complete quiz 2 on both bases so that we can have a better understanding of what the impact of this is. However, I will note that if the tax benefit arising from the difference between policy liability and termination value is allowed, it would still be subject to the admissibility rules that apply to deferred tax assets. In other words, they would only be allowed to be recognised to the extent that they can be offset against deferred tax liabilities that exist within the company. Finally, quality of capital is one area where we have not issued any proposals yet. And this refers to the types of capital that an insurer can use in determining its capital base. In other words, things like Tier 1 and Tier 2 capital. We're awaiting proposals for ADIs to be finalised within APRA, and then we intend to adopt these proposals for insurers where we feel it is appropriate and having regard to the special requirements of life insurance statutory funds. I'll now just spend some time talking about discount rates. APRA originally proposed that the risk-free discount rate will be based on the zero coupon spot curve of Commonwealth Government securities. APRA remains of the view that the zero coupon spot yield curve for Commonwealth Government securities provides the best proxy for risk-free rates. There were many submissions from the life insurance industry arguing that swap rates would be a more appropriate reference point. The three main arguments were that swap rates remain highly liquid even when markets are stressed, that swaps are available at longer durations than Commonwealth Government securities, and that hedging instruments normally reference swap rates rather than Commonwealth Government securities. APRA actually disagrees with the view that the swap market is more robust than the CGS market in adverse circumstances. However, we do recognise that it is possible for both markets to become distorted in extreme circumstances. However, we feel the CGS is the more reliable of the two. Also, there is no need to adjust the CGS yields for credit risk. We do, however, recognise that CGS does have issues regarding extrapolation and hedging. For quiz two, APRA is being more flexible in allowing extrapolation of the yield to be made by reference to other instruments such as swaps, as long as there is allowance made for liquidity and credit risk. We may issue guidance in this area if we feel that it is necessary. Some submissions also argued that risk-free rates were not appropriate for capital standards that targeted a 99.5% probability of sufficiency. We do not agree with this argument. In our view, risk-free rates are a means for adjusting the value of future cash flows for the time value of money. Uncertainty around the timing and quantum of future cash flows is allowed for through the capital charges, not via the discount rate. Submissions from the life insurance industry also strongly supported the use of a liquidity premium adjustment to the risk-free rate for the purposes of discounting illiquid liabilities. We have expanded the list of liabilities eligible for a liquidity premium to include certain types of products that can be surrendered, but only where the surrender values can be reduced to reflect any increase in the liquidity premium. So in addition to lifetime annuities, this would include term certain annuities, fixed term fixed rate products, and funeral bonds. We are currently investigating the methods for determining a liquidity premium. This includes reviewing overseas developments, including Solvency II, and we're also looking for assistance from the Institute of Actuaries. I'll just point out that any method will need to be standardised so that at any point in time, a similar liquidity premium is used across the industry. And also, the method will also need to be robust enough to give reasonable results in stress circumstances. I'll now hand over to Suzanne, who will take us through insurance risk and operational risk.